know, the patron would have the right to the girl for that night, you know, and he had to be the patron. And this girl just holds his hand and says, "Take me away from here."
Welcome to Season 2 of India Book Podcast. India Book is a podcast that uses literature as a lever to bring up multiple fields of India. This is a perfect podcast for you if you're a bibliophile looking for your next read, or if you're a trivia junkie who are interested in learning more about things. It's also perfect for you if you're just interested in learning more about India as a nation. Every episode focuses on a different theme and takes place via conversations between the host and the celebrity author that we have on the show. I am Ayushi Mona, your host on India Book.
Lakshmi Reddy, a trailblazer in surgery and women's rights, is the story of a pioneer path creator for women. She was the first girl student in Pudukkottai, the first Indian woman surgeon from Madras Medical College, the first Indian member of the Women's Indian Association, the first woman member of legislature of Madras Presidency, the first woman deputy speaker, and the first elder woman. In this book, the author describes the indomitable spirit of a woman who campaigned to get rid of the practice of wet nurses, fought for girls' education, widow remarriage, equal property rights, education reform, and rural healthcare for women. She took up the case of getting the practice of dedicating young girls as devdas abolished. Join me on this episode with V.R. Devika, a well-known storyteller, educationalist, Gandhi scholar. She is known as a cultural activist. And we will be talking about Muthu Lakshmi Reddy and how her career followed one of the most epic paths that we've seen for Indian women. Join me on this episode of India Book.
Hi everyone, I'm Ayushi Mona and you're listening to India Booked, a podcast where we lean into the idea of India through its literature and people who are writing about India. Today, I'm very excited to have with me V.R. Devika. She is a well-known storyteller, an educationist, a Gandhi scholar. She's also a cultural activist and has been associated with multiple organizations and has won several awards. She's the founder trustee of the Asima Trust, which links traditional performing arts and education to bring Mahatma Gandhi's ideals of nonviolence to children. And today we are going to be talking about an extremely interesting monograph, a book on Dr. Muthu Lakshmi Reddy, who was a trailblazer in surgery and women's rights. Devika ma'am, it's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you so much for taking our time for the podcast.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I'm delighted to be here.
So the first thing I actually have to tell you is that before I started reading this book, I have read other books in the Pioneers of Modern India series, but I knew, say, a Homi Bhabha, but I never knew of, you know, a Dr. Muthu Lakshmi Reddy. And after having read the book, I think it's criminal on our parts to not know of her. So I want to understand, while you've shared a lot about, you know, your journey and association, you know, with you volunteering at the Y home, etc. But what made you think that, yes, I should be the one who should be writing this book, and it's time that more people know about her and the legacy that she's left behind?
Thank you, Ayushi. Yes, it is very important to share the story. Yesterday was her death anniversary. So I live about 1 kilometer from a place where she had a home in 1930s. And that place is now surrounded by huge high-rises. In the middle is her samadhi. It's like a little island where people are worshipping, you know. And I went there yesterday, being her death anniversary. That house, after her husband died and she moved into Avai home, had been a free dispensary for the local people. And it was also called Roti House because free bread was being given to people. Homemade bread was being given to free people for decades. And, you know, this is a lady who I cannot believe worked for the welfare of people in million ways, you know, so many different ways. And in 1985, I, being a student of dance, that is Bharatanatyam, had heard about the history of Bharatanatyam as belonging to the Devadasis. And there was a huge amount of North American scholarship and North Indian scholarship, which was denigrating her for taking away the dance from the Devadasis. And, picturing her as a villain. And I had bought into that story too. 1985, I was requested by INTAC, Indian National Trust for Art and Cultural Heritage, which I had joined after being a school teacher for some 15 years. I joined INTAC as Director for Education and Culture. And I started a project for English speaking as skill development for Avai home girls. And I met so many different people who considered her a goddess because they were all there, they and their families were beneficiaries of her activism. And Avai home requested me to make a production on Muthulakshmi Reddy. So to write the script for the production, I began to research on her. I interviewed her son, I interviewed Dr. V. Shanta, the legendary cancer specialist who was the chairman of the Cancer Institute, who was her disciple, and Dr. Sarojini Varadappan, who was a close associate, and her son, etc., etc. That is when I began to understand why is it that Dr. Muthulakshmi Reddy not known to people. So I began to give talks. I told whoever wanted to listen to the stories, I was giving these stories, and every talk became a new learning because questions were asked and I delved deep. So since 1985, I have been working on this story, and it was in 2019, in the last meeting I had with Dr. V. Shanta, the chairman of Cancer Institute, she told me, Devika, it's time a new book comes on Amma, as she called her. You must write about Muthulakshmi Reddy, she said. So I decided it is given to me to write this book, you know. And so I began to look for someone who would publish it. And Niyogi, I'm very grateful to Niyogi for immediately agreeing to publish this book. And so here we are.
And you know, Devika ma'am, I think throughout this book, when I was reading it, I did recall, okay, ek baar there was a Google doodle, you know, and that actually, I think, set a lot of tongues wagging, and people said, okay, who is this? And, you know, we've not heard of her. And, you know, there was some amount of, you know, shoots of awareness, I would say, that started happening. But if you look at, you know, the life of Muthulakshmi Reddy, she has been a pioneer and a path creator on so many fronts. So by itself, the story of a girl who belongs to a line of Devadasis on the maternal side, becoming 100%, you know, academic achieving surgeon in 1921 itself would be a story, you know.
1912 she passed out.
Yes, I mixed up, sorry. So by itself, the story of, you know, somebody who comes from a long line of Devadasis and becoming a surgeon in 1912 would have been a fascinating story. But not just that, the fact that she then became the first Indian member of the Women's Indian Association. She fought for girls' education. She campaigned to get rid of this whole practice of wet nurses. The kind of even marriage, right? A marriage of equals that she had at the age of 28 in that era. Everything about her life was wonderful and special and path-breaking is what I constantly felt while reading the book.
Absolutely. See, what is really fascinating is that she had seen her mother, a very strong woman, at the age of 11, her mother was going to be dedicated, and Mr. Narayana Swami, the principal of H.H. Raja's college, was requested by his the sister of the king to be the patron. You know, the patron would have the right to the girl for that night, you know, and he had to be the patron. And this girl just holds his hand and says, "Take me away from here." 11-year-old girl asks a nearly 30-year-old man, you know, and she says, "I don't want to be a public woman. I want to have you as my husband. I will consider you my husband. Please take me away from here." She asked him, and he kind of, you know, brought her out and made a house for her. But Narayana Swami need not have acknowledged his paternity for Muthulakshmi and the three other siblings that she had. But he acknowledged it, and he took an active part in their education, in their growth, and did homeschooling for her. And a homeschooled girl becomes opts for the tougher MBBS and not for the LMH in 1907 in the Madras Medical College. Can you believe it?
And her father, in fact, I think wanted her to be a teacher or an educationist or something. And it was she, you know, who said that, "No, I want to be a surgeon." And that the kind of clarity of thought, the belief that she had, you know, in her actions and in just understanding that education could change her life at that point of time in the world, I think was path breaking. Once again, I think I've used the word path breaking thrice, but for everybody listening to this podcast, they just have to read the book and they will know what I mean.
Yes, exactly. You know, it was a time when even the British dean and others looked down upon women in medicine, in medical education. Even they were not very much into allowing young women to study medicine. They had their own misogynistic attitudes. But here was a girl who was so determined that she knew that somehow she would change them, change their behavior towards her and their attitude towards her by sheer hard work. And by not only that, I don't want to give away the whole story because, you know, I want people to read the book. There's so many little things that she did, even as a medical student, that were unbelievably courageous.
Yes.
You know. Like bringing her cousin's maternal relative girl's infant baby. The mother had died at childbirth, and because she came from a Melakara community, which was the name before Isai Vellalar was given, and this is the Devadasi community, the father of the baby had no interest in the baby. And so this girl, a medical student, brings that infant to Madras and keeps her on her lap as she studies for medicine and adopts her before getting married. I mean, there was no formal adoption, but she brings her up as her own daughter. Can you believe it? You know, so these kind of very courageous things that she did. And she was not just into her studies. She was very aware of nationalist movement that was brewing all around her. Even as a medical student, she was looking at women's rights. She was looking at the health issues of the young girls. And she became a volunteer medical consultant to the many homes that were there. And she was concerned about the safety of the young women, even as a medical student. I mean, this was something very extraordinary, I feel.
Yes, I think for the time that she lived in, I almost, while reading the book, I constantly kept thinking to myself that, you know, that yes, she was, in a world where she was not the right caste, she was not the right community, she was not the right class, she was not the right gender, right, to get access to any of these privileges. Nothing worked in her way. With a snap of a finger, her life could have been different at any point of moment of time, right? Whether it was, her mother's life or even the kind of interest that her father actually took in bringing her up. Or even if the Maharaja had said, no, I will not give you a scholarship for your education and you need not go to this boys' college. Please forget about this.
Yeah.
At any point of time. And to me, what was fascinating is that it was almost as if, you know, by the hands of a divine force or somewhere in the universe conspiring, this young girl, from the time that, boys chased her, calling her from a Devdasi family while she was, walking around, going to school, and to the point of time when she actually goes to college, becomes an academic achiever, changes so much, and it wasn't that she was just a reformer or just an activist or just a thinker. She actually also founded medical institutions like the Cancer Institute in Chennai are there today, which treats thousands of patients. And for a woman to pick up oncology, which was an extremely academically advanced medical interest also, right, in the early 20th century, is phenomenal. I had goosebumps when I was reading the book. I read it at a stretch, actually. And now that I'm recalling portions of what I read, Devika ma'am, I still have goosebumps.
She was earning some 3,000 rupees in the 1920s, in the 1914, 15, 16. Can you believe it? That was a very, very high amount, 3,000 rupees and all that. And for her to not be satisfied with just that, earning good money and being just a good doctor and looking after her patients, that would have been enough for her to be, kind of a pathbreaker and a big pioneer. That was enough. But to get into women's education, to get into equal property rights for women, to get into campaigning to stop the wet nursing system, to become an educationist, a consultant to the British government, the only Indian member in the Hartog Committee, which traveled all over British India, including Burma and Ceylon and other places, to look at education reform. And she being the only Indian in it, and being the first institution outside Wardha to start the Mahatma Gandhi's basic education system in a school, was away home that she founded. Can you even imagine the range that she was working in, And when she goes to Ceylon as a member of the Hartog Committee, she is more interested in the plight of the women workers in the plantations, the Tamils who were employed there. And she interviews them and she gives a separate report on them about their plight, and which the Hartog Committee report itself is supposed to be a very great document, where she had written extensively about education system in India.
And
I have to ask you, why do you think that despite her accolades in every field of achievement imaginable, you know, despite the kind of hardship she faced, even in her personal life, I think the instance in the book, right, of her first childbirth, I won't get into details because, of course, I want to, as you said, keep some spoilers, but the kind of spectrum of achievement she has, why is it that, you know, we don't say we know a Sarojini Naidu, we know an Annie Besant, you know, that still make their way into children's books on history, that still make it into, you know, popular reimagining of history or the freedom movement. For instance, we will constantly hear talk of abolition of sati, at least, right? Or say what, you know, Gandhi did in terms of women's rights. But how is it that so much of Muthulakshmi Reddy's life has eclipsed public knowledge despite all of these achievements together being so significant?
Absolutely. See, I think till the 80s, after independence, there had been very, very little known about her. The antagonists actually brought her into the picture by writing against her about the Devadasi Abolition Act. And I think her name started circulating in the dance scholarship world, that she was responsible for the Devadasi Abolition Act. And I remember a very big scholar shouting at me at an online speech I was giving, you should not be praising her. You should be doing Nindastuti to her. When she killed dedication, she killed dance. Then she started screaming at me, this great scholar from North India. So I wanted to tell her. There was so much screaming that I couldn't tell her that the answer I would give her is what Muthulakshmi Reddy is supposed to have given to her opponent Satyamurthy in the legislature when he told her that the Devadasi system was a safety valve for society and that she need not oppose her because it saved men or whatever. You know, it was a safety valve by providing concubinage to men, married men. It was a safety valve in society, he said. So she is said to have screamed back at him at the legislature, why don't you send your daughters then? Why don't you send your family members? If this is a safety valve and divine ordained thing, please send your daughters, she told him. You know, this is what I would have told this lady who screamed at me also, this big scholar at me also. And I think I must thank these people because of their antagonism. I decided that I must bring this book. And when I told all this to Dr. Shanta, she was very hurt. And she said, what do they think, you know, who this woman is? Devika, you must write, she said.
And I have to tell you, Devika ma'am, that in one of my earliest podcast episodes, this was, I was interviewing an author on a fiction piece set in pre-independence India, you know, and the author had a very glowing perspective of Devadasis, right? Their point of view was that no, Devadasis had a lot of freedom, they had a lot of independence, you know. What if they never, you know, the wives had to suffer, but the Devadasi as a proverbial other woman had all the freedom, right? So to me also, this is a very interesting aspect in at least the now some 35, 36 episodes that I've done on this podcast, is that I, post reading this book, right, got a more, I would say, pragmatic view of the life that Devadasis actually led. A few of them may have had more privilege than the others. In fact, I would say Muthulakshmi's mother had the best privilege and luck of actually finding somebody like Narayana Swami, because if he did not really enter her life, Muthulakshmi would have been yet another name lost to time and history. And with her, so much would have been lost, right? In fact, for people listening to the podcast, you know, there's so much trivia that I ended up, you know, hearing and reading about, and the extent of involvement that she had. And of course, there are many people know that, for instance, her name was even included in the first national flag that was hoisted on Red Fort. She has had the most phenomenal life. And I think as Indians, or even people outside of India, if they listen to this podcast, if you've not read of her life, it's a huge disservice that you have done to yourself, because in many ways she was also one of the makers and shapers of India, just like a Gandhi, just like a Sardar Patel, you know, because the kind of work that she did with women's rights, with advancing women's education, and in fact doing this all for her community, with the kind of rigor and consistency, in itself is laudable.
Absolutely. I think you have just taken the words out of my mouth, Ayushi. Wonderful. You know, the nostalgists for the Devadasi system are not wrong. There were some women who were extraordinarily powerful. And they had the privilege and patronage of the powerful people with them. And they opposed the Abolition Act. How did they oppose it? Because of the patronage of the upper class men, because of the support of the upper class men. There were some who wrote to Devan C.P. Ramaswamy Iyer against the ban. And there were Bangalore Nagarathamma, who had suffered indignities in her childhood because of the system, where her mother had been thrown away and from Mysore, whose uncle had designs to send her to a patron. But because of her extraordinary talent and the way she came up in life, and because of the power she got later in her life, she opposed the ban, also because of the patronage she had and the friendship she had with the powerful upper-class men. I'm not denying that people like Bangalore Nagarathamma, Durai Kannu Ammal, and others had such great power within themselves. But there were scores and scores of young women who were suffering indignities because of the system. You know, it is like when a woman is violated, it is blaming the victim, you know. And in the same way, these women who were used by men were blaming them for immoral attitudes, you know, for being immoral, while committing immoral acts with them, to blame them. So it's blaming the victim. And that is what she wanted to remove. She wanted to give them an anonymity. And she said, it doesn't matter if the art suffers for a short while, it will take a different form, and it will come out and it will become internationalized, which is what has happened, which is resented by the nostalgists for the Devadasi system, some of whom were incredibly great artists. But as I keep on telling people, whatever great art heredity may have given you, what you perform today, a performance is always in the moment. What you perform today, even if you're a hereditary artist, is informed by the circumstances under which you have grown up, you have seen the world, your education, your circumstances, where you're performing and who is watching you, you know. And that is, so it is the 21st century performance that you are doing, not the 14th century of your heritage, you know. So I'm all for supporting hereditary artists. It is fantastic that many of them have come forward, and some of them are very, very, very great artists. they are all to be encouraged and to be seen and to be supported. But the Devadas system itself had to go. The dedication of young girls had to go. And that is what she worked for as a health health official and as a social reformer and as a woman women's development activist. She did not call herself a feminist. She said, we have to work with the men. Men are equally important to us. We are not superior or inferior to men. This is what she kept saying.
And it's so funny to me, you know, that these days, even today, people will ask questions to female celebrities, you know, or female industrialists or actors or whoever that, you know, can women have it all? And it's so hilarious because this woman was involved in social activism, being at the forefront of her medical career, married with children, with a political career, finding time for arts and crafts, and living in a traditional society with no technological enablement to support her back then. So it's almost, when I was contrasting and I finished reading this book, I chuckled mentally because almost inevitably any successful woman will be asked that, you know, can a woman have it all? And this was a woman who had it all. And she had it all because she made it happen, which I think was phenomenal.
When you were talking about how Narayanasamy came into Chandramal's life, and but for him or the king, that this woman would have been just another person in the community, I feel I will give 100% to the two women, you know, the mother and the daughter, because of their own conviction and their own action and their own steadfast sticking to their conviction was what brought about. I have a feeling both Narayanasamy and Sundaram Reddy just had to give in to these two women. You know,
that's wonderful.
It is their power that they had. So I think a woman can make it happen.
Thank you so much. I think this has been such a lovely conversation. I have to ask you one question though, from the which is not related to the book, which is just you know, as a writer and somebody, you know, who's a scholar and you know, you've done a PhD on Gandhiji's communication strategies. If you had to really pick one character from the array of people that Muthulakshmi Reddy met in her life and maybe write a spin-off series or a spin-off book or a spin-off monograph on that character, which character apart from her would you pick from the long, long list of people she influenced, worked with, or was influenced by?
Dr. Sundaram Reddy. I think Dr. Sundaram Reddy, from the snatches of information that I'm getting post-writing this book, I think was a phenomenal character. You know, he ran away from his uncle's home with just 5 rupees in his pocket because his uncle wanted him to marry a woman of his choice, a girl of his choice. He didn't want to marry her. So he one night just left. He was a timekeeper in some small place in Mysore, and then becomes a surgeon and becomes an FRCS and insists on marrying Muthulakshmi Reddy, who was not interested in him. He signs an agreement where she asks him to be an equal partner and that to, he will never oppose any of her activism. And he works with her completely in her activism. I think I would like to learn more about him and write about him. Phenomenal. Yesterday when I visited his grave, I don't know whether he was buried or cremated. There is a grave, there is a samadhi for him, and there is a stone there that proclaims that he was a watchman, a timekeeper in some factory in Mysore, and then he becomes an FRCS and marries this lady and completely supports her.
Wow. Thank you so much. And for everyone listening to the podcast, please grab a copy of Muthulakshmi Reddy, A Trailblazer in Surgery and Women's Rights. This is part of Niyogi Press's Pioneers of Modern India series. The book is available on Amazon, on Flipkart, on the website of Niyogi Press. Please do yourself a favor and read it. Gift this book to young people in your family. Gift this book to libraries, because very, very rarely will we ever come across a tale of someone who's done so much just by the power of her will and belief. And for that, Devika ma'am, I am very grateful to you for writing this book. Thank you once again for being on the podcast.
Thank you for this warmth, Ayushi. Really nice. I enjoyed it so much.
Did you like this episode? Don't forget to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram, where we are available as India Book Podcast. Also, if you'd like to recommend changes that we should make to the show or some author that we should definitely have, feel free to leave us feedback, recommendations, etc. on indiabookpodcast@gmail.com. If you love listening to the show, do not forget to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever it is that you get your podcast fix from.